Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia dealers of Ireland. Wherever the next 7 years bring you, Kia are with you all the way.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Let's go straight to Mary Fitzgerald. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You were listening to the Taoiseach's apology there and statement. What's your initial reaction? I know it's difficult to give an initial reaction.
Initial reaction, in my opinion, is, you know, it's all a bit late down the line. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of harm, there's a lot of hurt, there's a lot of pain in a lot of us that we can't reach. And to this day, it's still hard to get to the bottom of it all. It wasn't always the case that you know, like young people like myself, you know, were forced to go there. That wasn't the case in my situation. Mm-hmm. My parents did everything to keep me at home.
Okay.
And that was not allowed.
You were 13?
I was 13, yes.
And you were pregnant?
That's right.
As the result of a rape?
That's right.
And, well, this it's a strong line in the report and indeed the newspapers. What about the fathers and the parents? Obviously, the father in your case was a criminal. He raped you.
Yes.
Raped an underage child. Was he ever investigated by the Gardaí?
No.
Okay. That's not okay, but I'm just going through a list here. Your parents wanted to keep you.
My parents wanted to keep me at home and for me to go to the local hospital to give birth to the baby.
Yeah.
And that wasn't allowed.
By who, Mary?
By the Catholic Church.
In what way?
In the way that, you know, like, you know, it wouldn't be right for, under the circumstances that were involved, mm-hmm. for me to go to the local hospital. It would be better for me to go to the home where the situation was, where there was more married mothers and more help there, which was not the case.
And did the church, now people forget the church, and still have the church of role in the Catholic Church, a role almost in every aspect of Irish society, from schools to hospitals to local community groups to local activity groups to local youth clubs to local, if they allowed disco dancing in those days. But you were, this is 1977, and you're saying your parents, who wanted to keep you, were told categorically that you would not be allowed into the local hospital.
No, under any circumstances. And, you know, like, it wasn't, you know, like, I mean, I was the youngest of five. Yeah. I had three older brothers and an older sister. And I found, like, it was like, you know, if you had an ill person in the house, everyone was affected by this. Mm-hmm. You know, there was constant calls from a priest, from a social worker, you know, not advising or not giving any help to my parents, but telling them that what had to happen and where I had to go. And if at all, that I would have gone there at 4 months pregnant, not at 8 months. Yeah. But my parents stopped that.
So were you 8 months when you went?
I was 8 months pregnant, yes.
And if you were taken to Bessbury, you didn't want to go, and your parents didn't want you to go.
No. No, and it wasn't that, I mean, you know, in the line of other girls there, mm-hmm. I mean, I was 13, and I'd say the next age was 19. Yeah. Like, I was like a sore thumb to them. like me hanging around there, like I had no one to talk to. I'll always remember that railing on the way into the home. Like, I mean, I used to walk up and down that every day on my own. But I can remember, like, you know, I asked them, could I talk to my mother? I kept at it.
Okay.
And they allowed my mother to ring me every night at 7 o'clock. And I used to stop myself crying on the phone, not to upset my mother.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's all these little things and little, you know, the psychological and the emotional effect on everybody. You know, it was unfortunate enough that I went into the local hospital, you know, at 3 months, and they thought I had my appendix. It was discovered actually that I was pregnant, and it was around the local area, you know, in tick time anyway.
And this is 1977.
That's right.
Yeah, this is relatively recently. These.
That's right.
There are people still alive who were in power then.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I wouldn't say now a lot of the people that were in the home are alive, but like. You know, like, I mean, I can remember throughout school, you know, the power, like, I was left-handed and I was nearly beaten to death.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I've all my life seen the power that the Catholic Church had. And, I mean, I've seen it, like, I mean, you know, with, you know, how my parents cried and cried to keep me at home. Now, there wasn't any talk of me keeping the baby, but just to keep me at home and the baby for me to go to the local hospital. You know, not the trauma of, I mean, Cork in, back in 1977 was a long way away, you know. And even that alone, you know, and I just don't see, like, I mean, someone told me, like, I mean, they're a couple of years ago out in Africa, how all these cases are handled with compassion and love, and they guide the people through these traumas, and whatever help is there and whatever they want to do is looked after. And this is Ireland, a Catholic country. I, you know, like, what was it all for? Who was benefiting from it? You know, who was there, you know, telling my, you know, parents, like all parents, like, this 13-year-old girl now, she has to leave and she has to do this and she has to do that. And under no circumstances can the baby be brought back. I mean, to have that much power. And I mean, they had that power because you wouldn't tell my father what to do. And he had to let it happen.
Your father stood up to them.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, I wasn't very well after the birth of the baby. My heart was weak, and it took a fortnight before I could see the baby myself. And the day after that, after I saw that baby, my father arrived down suddenly to the home and said I was going home.
Yeah.
And he said. And they said, look, they said, well, my father said, if you want this baby to stay here, Mary is going home.
Yeah.
And that ended my father ever talking about that ever again. And I mean, I'm sure I'm only one in thousands. I mean, I was lucky. I had my parents fighting my corner.
Yeah.
But there was people, I'm sure, like, I mean, that went through hell on earth over a baby.
And what do you think? I know it's very hard to digest for anybody. 3,000 pages, just under. What do you think of the commissioned report? And one of the big headlines this morning is that society was to blame. It was this amalgam of all of us. All of us were to blame.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean...
But you're saying, categorically, my parents weren't to blame for both.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It broke their heart.
And Micheál Martin, I know you heard his apology, but again, I'm just trying to digest it myself, but one odd phrase that he used was the Magdalens, referring to survivors of the Magdalene laundry, but that's neither here nor there. But he did say that it was a coalition of priests, doctors and nuns who, but like he left out from the conversation I'm having with you, he left out the Gardaí, he left out local politicians of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, who would have been part of the local hierarchy, if you follow me. And yes. The politicians that handed over our schools to the Catholic Church and our hospitals and their mother and baby homes, as they were called, and handed over all that responsibility without inspection or oversight. But what is your view of that point made in the overall commission report that it was society? Now, they do go into more detail, but it's a clear line that society was to blame.
Well, in my opinion, the Catholic Church show, their men. God's gift to the world are men in the Catholic Church eyes. What could you say to the poor men in Ireland, and what could you ask them to do? Oh, God, help us. The women, in the walk of life, we're second class citizens,
I'm trying to work out, Mary. You were 1977 when you became a mother, so you were 13. So you were born in what? 64, 65.
63.
Okay, 2 years out. Just about the relationship between church and state that people think is in the long distant past. 2 years. When you were 2 years of age, Mary, the Minister for Foreign Affairs in Ireland, it was a Fianna Fáil government, was Frank Aiken. And Frank Aiken was also the Deputy Prime Minister at the time, if I remember correctly. He'd been excommunicated by the church in 1923. He was a Sinn Féiner for his part in the Civil War. But when he was Minister for Foreign Affairs, when you were 2 years of age, Mary, and this is, 11 years before you were raped and put into this home by a coalition of powerful people, it seems, who were running our society. Our Minister for Foreign Affairs wrote to the Archbishop of Dublin, Charles McQuaid, and said, this was after the death of the head of state, the Queen Louise of Sweden, okay? There was going to be a memorial service for that queen at a Lutheran church in Dublin. And our Minister for Foreign Affairs wrote to the Archbishop of Dublin to say, "What can I attend that memorial service?" And the Archbishop of Dublin wrote back, this is not, it's not funny, even though it's bizarre, but I have loads more examples. In the same day, Archbishop, he was a prolific letter writer, Archbishop McQuaid wrote back to our Minister for Foreign Affairs, in view of your position as Minister for External Affairs, I should not object to you attending passively at a Lutheran service. In other words, this was the Archbishop saying, you can go, by the way, the fact that he had to ask was crazy, you can go, by the way, but you must not participate. Okay, that's Fianna Fáil. That's Fianna Fáil. John A. Costello, when he was Prime Minister, Taoiseach of Ireland, going back now to the 1940s, but a different political party, Fine Gael. And between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, they were the main parties in power during the at local, national level as well. There's a photograph. Well-known photographs, and you get it on the UCD, and it's the President of Ireland, Eamon de Valera, our President, former Taoiseach, on bended knee, Mary, in a full dress suit, long tails, kissing the ring on his hand of John Charles McQuaid as Frank Aiken looked on again. This is the subservience of church to state. John A. Costello, when he was Prime Minister, Taoiseach of Ireland, said, I'll try and find it here again, I have no hesitation in saying that we as a government representing the people, the overwhelming majority of whom are of the one faith, who have a special position in the Constitution, when we are given advice or warnings by the authoritative people in the Catholic Church on matters strictly confined to faith and morals, so long as I am here, and I'm sure I speak for my colleagues, we will give to their directions given within that scope, and I've no doubt that they've no desire in the slightest to go one fraction of an inch outside the sphere of faith and morals. Laughable. Our complete obedience and allegiance. I am an Irishman second. This is our Prime Minister, Fine Gael. I am an Irishman second. I am a Catholic first. And I accept without qualification, in all respects, the teaching of the hierarchy and the church to which I belong. So, yeah. And you were 2 years of age. When the Frank Aiken thing happened, you were two. You were in 1977. 1977, Jack Lynch, there was a change of government that year. So Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil were both in power. Jack Lynch and Liam Cosgrave were Taoiseach, respectively. In 1977, that's the year you were forced into Bessborough.
That's right.
And what happened when your baby was born, Mary? Where was your baby born?
In St. Finbarr's Hospital in Cork.
Okay.
I'm going back. I'm to 13 now. I was just 14. You know, I can remember that. You know, I was very, very, very weak after it, and I was a week in St. Finbarr's Hospital. I barely remember it.
Yeah, okay.
And then I was brought back to Bessborough, and I was a week in their little hospital there, where I wasn't allowed out of bed either.
But I
only saw that baby once.
And that was your daughter?
That was my daughter.
And did you get to name her, Mary? Her first name?
I did. But, like, I think you're talking, the one word that comes up in all of this is power.
Mm.
The power was there for institutions, for the Catholic Church, the whole power, the power they had over the ordinary people of Ireland. I mean, it was just, you know, like, it's mind-boggling when you think back.
But Mary, they were. I take that point, and all the encyclicals of the Catholic Church going back through many, many decades of the last century, it's relatively recent, but we've got the last century, the encyclicals of the Catholic Church were all about sex and all against sex and against contraception. There's one, again, I'll try and find it. There's one encyclical. Again, we have our Taoiseach saying, I will look to the Catholic Church for guidance. And he didn't say everything, but we know it was everything. But in an encyclical from the Catholic Church, it says of the 26 Episcopal pastorals, this is from the report, of the 26 Episcopal pastorals, 12 reaffirmed the sanctity of marriage or inadmissibility of divorce. That was totally agreed by the Irish state up until the end of the century, practically. 11 deplored the insidious effects of the press, wireless or evil literature. 8 inveigled against the cinema or theatre. 6 warned of the dangers of dancing. 4 alluded delicately to contraception, which, as you know, it wasn't that contraception was not allowed in Ireland for the most of the last century. It was illegal. It was against the law. You could end up in prison if you were found in possession of contraceptives. 4 alluded delicately to contraception, abortion or infanticide. 3 condemned company keeping. Could you believe it, Mary? 3 condemned company keeping. And you know the whole stuff about jazz music. And I know people say, oh, this is way back. But this was all... Like in the march against any progressives, in go back to Jim Gralton up in Leitrim in the 1930s and 40s, and the march against any progressives, there was the parish priest, but there was also the local politician, and it was the eye turned by the local Garda as well. For example, when you were in Bessborough, did anyone say, "This child is only 13; she's pregnant"? Without them not even knowing the background where you were raped, but to say even if it was, which it wasn't consensual, this is statutory rape. Did anyone say we ring the guards? Did anyone say in the hospital when the baby was being born, what age is this child? This mother?
No. I'd often wonder, you know, what would be the attitude of people today, and what would they do, you know, if the circumstances were exactly the same, and, you know, what would people's reaction be? We had one great neighbour that you know, mm-hmm. a priest made a comment to this neighbour about this situation,
yeah.
and it's, this beautiful neighbour said, you put your foot inside this door one more time and say anything about that family, and I'll kill you. And that was only one person.
And she was she was talking about the family of the rapist.
No, she was talking about our family.
Oh my God!
He said, "If you say one word about
against
about
them.
Against that family."
Oh, brilliant! Brilliant. Sorry, I misunderstood. Okay.
Against that family.
Great. But you're saying that
I'll come in here again.
Great.
You're supposed to. You're coming in here and talking about that family when you should be up there and talking to the family. And she said, "That's what's happening all over."
And who was that family talking to? Who were they checking when they said, "Don't set a foot inside this door again"? That's just another neighbour.
Oh, to the local priest.
Oh, the local.
He went in and made a comment to the neighbours about it, and that neighbour said, "You should be in their house, not in my house."
Yeah. Helping.
And that's what you know. It was a great story, and it was a great, you know, but like there was no offer of help. The Catholic Church didn't believe in help. So how were the people going to come up with that strategy, like, you know? It wasn't a helpful organisation in saying, "Look, let's get together now and help this poor family. Yeah. Let's go out and see what we can do. Yeah. Is there anything we can do? You know, do they need anything? What about that girl's mother or father? You know, what can we do for them?" That wasn't the, you know, the society that we were living in. And that's, you know, where it's, you know, like, you know, where, you know, compassion and, you know, and love and just help people through it. It was what they had to be done, not to help through the situation. Control it, but don't help. None of the control was right. Look, this is what is after happening. It's very sad. It's awful. But let's offer help to them.
Yeah.
You know, there was no help. As you say, it was all, you know, power and all, you know, what they can do, and big people.
So, Mary, that priest, I don't want to step too far because it is relatively recently, but that priest was going around denouncing you and your family.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, you see, again in the report it says, even though, and I'll try and find the pages, in chapter 9, even though later on in the report, I have it here, early in the report it says, when people talked about these denunciations from the altar, now I know I presume you weren't denounced from the altar, were you?
No.
But it did happen, as you know, previously. But it said, it should be noted, this is the commission, that while there is evidence of such denunciations from the altar, they were not as common as is sometimes suggested. But then when you go further into the report, you'll see that in the diocese of God, of Tuam, isn't it, the Tuam diocese, that the archbishop sent out a letter to all his priests, saying you are from the pulpit to denounce anyone who is falls pregnant outside of marriage in your parish, and to say to them, this is bad for the family, bad for the young person, or regardless of the age, and also bad for the reputation of the locality.
Yeah,
that was a bishop telling his priest that. Mary, can you stay with us for a few minutes, please?
I
really
can.
appreciate your contact, joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
It's 1977 in Ireland. The president is Patrick Hillary, former Minister for Education in Fianna Fáil. The Taoiseach until the 5th of July that year was Liam Cosgrave Fine Gael. It was a Fine Gael Labour coalition. Jack Lynch became Taoiseach on the 5th of July, Fianna Fáil as well. The Dáil was meeting, the Seanad was meeting. It was a busy year in terms of the economy, as per usual. Cork were doing well and all that, carry on, three in a row. But in a part of Ireland, a young woman called Mary Fitzgerald in 1977 was 13, and she was raped by a man, obviously an older man. and her family wanted to keep the now pregnant Mary at home. And Mary says a coalition of church and state came together to overrule her very steadfast father and to force the local hospital, were told she would not be told that they would not be allowed in when she came full term. And Mary was brought to Bessborough, and where she had a baby in nearby St. Finbarr's Hospital in Cork in 1977. Mary, have you had any, in terms of your daughter, she's a young woman, hopefully,
That's right.
Still well. How did you manage to re-establish contact?
I did. Okay. I did eventually. We met in 2003. And, you know, it was such a joy, you know, to see her, that she was, you know, you'd always go through the stage, was she alive, was she dead, whatever. Yeah. And just to see her, she was beautiful. But to go back to that, like, you know, you'd have this perception that you can go straight ahead and get on with the situation. You know, you'll go back to giving birth, you think that, you know, that this is all going to be okay now, that everything will be okay and everything will run smoothly, but that don't happen either.
It's hard.
You know, I forget, you know, that she was reared by parents and good parents and had a different life, but you forget that. And you still have the emotion of, oh, this now, you know, she'll understand and everything will be lovely. But unfortunately, it doesn't happen all the time. Yeah. But saying that, like, we are in contact you know.
So your daughter would be around 43.
That's right.
Okay. That means she's 2 years older than the tarnished Leo Varadkar. That's how young, I'm trying to point out how young your daughter is. She is 17 years younger than our Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, who's, I'm just making the point that this is the relatively recent past. This is not, and for the report to say and the government to repeat, anyway, people have to make their own judgment that the whole scenario, the mother and baby homes, where the priests, I'm quoting from the Taoiseach's apology, priests, doctors and nuns, and he didn't mention local politicians, national politicians, people who, by the way, they hang portraits of on the wall in their offices. When they become Taoiseach, they pick one of their heroes. And I'm sure De Valera and John A. Costlow, and I'm sure other Taoiseach of the day, Sean Lemass, have all been... But these were in power at the time, and they were very, very powerful people, but they totally and completely acquiesced. As John A. Costlow said, I'm a Catholic first and an Irishman second. Colleen, stay with us, Mary, please, if you can. And how are you generally feeling today? Mary, by the way, you're a young woman as well. I'm very conscious of that. you were born, I think I'm young, but you were born 9 years after me, Mary. You're a young woman. How are you feeling today generally? I know you've had, I know given what everything has happened, but
yeah, well, you know, it's sad, and but, like, you know, only for all those great women, you know, that fought and fought and fought, this story would not be on a 3,000 page today.
Yeah, yeah.
And these are the people of Ireland that are the heroes.
Yeah.
Not our Catholic Church or politicians or anyone else. These general great people, and I thank them so much.
Stay with us. It's Mary Fitzgerald, a very young woman and a very young daughter as well. But Colleen Anderson. Colleen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thank you for having me on.
And thank you for contact. You did contribute to the commission's report. What's your reaction less than 24 hours later to the Taoiseach's apology, insofar as anyone can digest 3,000 pages?
Yes, and I haven't even, I've kind of skimmed over it, but haven't even really touched it. But I moved back home about 2.5 years ago. So the first, I came home October 31st, 2018. And then the week later, I met with the Commission of Investigation and gave my testimony of where I was born and basically what life I went to in the States. And
you were born in Sean Ross in Ross Cray.
Yes, and I was sent to the nun that was portrayed in the movie, Sister Hildegard. Yeah. She was portrayed in Philomena. I was sent to her niece in the States.
Oh, you're sent to her familial niece?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, isn't that
yes. A... Yeah. And, so.
And how did that go, or what? But like, if your mother did, your mother have any hand actor part in that decision?
Well, as far as I mean, there's a lot of different stories. I don't know if you ever really hear the correct story. She was 14. Like Mary, she was also raped at 14. And I don't know how she ended up in Sean Ross. I just know that the man was charged. He was brought up on charges.
Okay.
So unlike Mary, there was some law enforcement involved.
Okay.
And
rightly so, yeah.
Right. And I don't know. I mean, when I met her, I did meet her in 99 at Christchurch. She said she didn't sign any papers for me to be adopted, but she was also young. So I don't know, if she might have been coerced to do it or just had no choice. But then, like I said, and then I was sent to Sister Hildegard's niece in the States, and she suffered from schizophrenia. So it wasn't a very good childhood, very hard growing up. And one of the reasons why then I wanted to find my birth mom in Ireland.
And you did?
I did. I met her in 99, and she passed away 10 years ago. But I did get to meet her.
Okay.
And it was hard. It was very hard. She was very traumatized because it was a secret. She kept it a secret. Okay. And this whole thing with the report and everything, I mean, one comment she made to me when she met me was... worse than the rape was how the nuns had treated her. So to me, that was a very powerful statement. And then to hear basically no admission of the church or the nuns' behavior in this was a little saddening to me.
But it does actually say in the commission report, there is no doubt that women in mother and baby homes were subjected to emotional abuse. But there is very little evidence of physical abuse and no evidence of sexual abuse.
Right.
What do you think of that find? That, you can't call it a finding, but it is a finding, actually. It is a finding.
Right.
There's no
it's
doubt
abuse.
That women in mother and baby homes were subjected to emotional abuse, but there's very little evidence of physical abuse and no evidence of sexual abuse. Now, that would fly in the face of so many stories we've heard here over the last two decades on this programme. In terms of what your mother said happened to her in Sean Ross, could it be classified as physical abuse?
She never really got into it. Like I said, she was so shut down. It was just the fact of all she said was worse than a rape was the nuns and their behavior and how they treated her. So that's, like I said, that's a very powerful statement. And obviously it distraught her so much that she kept it a secret for so many years and kept me a secret and everything. She just didn't want to relive it. Any of it.
And do you know if your mother had other children subsequently?
She did. She had she had a natural child sister who I buried almost 3 years ago. In the States. She was also suffered from schizophrenia and ended up in a nursing home and was misdiagnosed with a pap smear and died of ovarian cancer at 50. So after I buried her, that was basically when I decided I wanted to come back home.
And have you an overall view of the report and the reaction to it?
Well, like I said, I'm still trying to process. I was part of the webinar that was on the other day. And, you know, it seemed like to me it was very empty kind of acknowledgement. Although I know today was, he did make the apology. Mm-hmm. And I wish my birth mom would have been alive to hear it. Whether or not she would have accepted it, it still is an acknowledgement that these things did happen. Not to the extent, I don't think, that most people probably, especially the mothers, endured there, but it's still an acknowledgement. And, like I said, I went to a very unhappy childhood in the States and then came back here to Ireland over 2 years ago and ended up in emergency accommodations. And so it's been very challenging. And then you hear these reports and you hear this coming out, and it triggers a lot of emotion. So.
Yeah. And did you have contact with your other siblings?
No, they because of these, because I kind of told my story, and on behalf of my mom, I mean, they don't see it that way. They think that I stepped on her grave and that I dishonored her. And because I, like I said, I am a secret, they just thought I was doing the wrong thing. So they want nothing to do with me.
Yeah, sorry to hear that. Colleen, what age was your mother when you were born?
She was 14.
Oh, sorry, she was 14.
Right.
And I want to ask you that because I see that my next caller, stay with us, Colleen, please. Our next caller was 20 years old. Her mother, Mary's mother, this is not Mary Fitzgerald, it's a different Mary. Mary's mother was 34. Is that correct, Mary? Oh, she just the line has dropped for a minute. Mark O'Mahony, Mark, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Your contribution, please, Mark.
Well, I suppose my contribution is a small bit different. You know, I was adopted in 1970 into a lovely home.
Okay.
You were born
in Bessborough.
I was born in Bessborough. Yeah. I found out when I was 47.
Okay.
And I was brought up not far from it, actually, in a town near. But I suppose, you know, what I think of the whole thing, I'd love if I could speak. I would have liked. My story is different, is that the trauma that was caused to my birth mother, I believe, obviously, she doesn't want to be in contact with me. And I presume to a certain degree it has to do with certain parts of that, okay?
Yeah.
Of the birth and all that, like, you know. But from my point of view, when I was given some non-identifying information at the time, right? And as I say, I was 46 years of age at the time. You know, I asked then, could they go through the correct channels through TUSLA, they would approach this person on record, and they gave me a lot of information. I have to be honest, there was a lot of non-disclosing information, which, you know, was important as well, obviously. You know, but they going through the channels, and this happened over a length of time. It didn't happen every couple, you know. There was a year on a waiting list, and that. So they made contact with this lady,
right.
Okay? And they wrote to her twice, whatever the structure is.
Yeah.
And they were told that she didn't want to engage in the process, which is her right or whatever, obviously. So, again, for me, I suppose, the term is you feel rejected again now, and I just to say that again, but I don't know what she went through, but I suppose that's my point. Like, I would feel that, you know, maybe I'd understand better, because it has a consequence on growing up through my life being adopted. It just has, you know, and that's kind of
And your mother was 21.
21 years.
And your father was 19.
Yes. Sorry, go ahead.
Do you know any of the circumstances as to why she ended up in Bessborough?
Well, as far as I've gathered, and this is information I got outside of the official channels for, you know, I think it had to do, her own mother was sick at the time, you know, just to say that. And they had a big family as well, and just to say that as well, you know, I was told, in the non-identifying information, you know, it said your birth mother took some time around her decision to place you for adoption and that.
Yeah.
And that was all, you know, and she asked for a photograph and that. But that's all information that was given at the time in 1970 in December, you know. And I suppose one of my points was that when I had met with the person from Tulsa, and I came away after getting that information, you know, like a couple of things struck me for myself. And one of those was I was I kind of, my birthday was the same. I, you know what I mean? My birthday was important to me, that it was the 18th of December. Okay. You know, just going through life. And also, but one thing then, as I was traveling away from it, I had to stop. I stopped in the car and I was trying to work out the point where it went from that this person gave me for adoption, you know, from the point I was born on the 18th of that date, I won't keep saying it, on the date, okay? Sorry. The point I was born to the point I was placed in the care of my parents, okay? Yeah. How long was that? That was one question in my mind. Yeah. And the other question that kind of troubled me was as well, is when after the point I was born, did my biological mother leave? So where am I kind of in between the two? That's a question that struck me kind of soon after. And like, I know the answer, and it's like, there were 7 weeks between, I don't know when my mother, whether I was with my mother for the first 7 weeks, but it was 7 weeks from the date I was born to the date that I was adopted. You know, so that was kind of a thing that, but as I said earlier, you know, like, it's just throughout your life, like, I believe this, that it's just something like as good as you would have it growing up, and I had it great, and my parents are beautiful people, like, it's always there, you know? It's always there, and that's it, you know? And
Okay. Mark, thanks indeed. That's Mark.
No problem, please.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks. That's Mark O'Mahony, Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We're talking about the Mother and Baby Home Commission report. We're talking about the Taoiseach's apology 45 minutes ago in the Dáil on behalf of the people of Ireland. We've been talking to, among others, Mary Fitzgerald, who was raped, pregnant at 13. Family wanted to keep her, but as she says herself, was forced to go to Bessborough Mother and Baby Home in Cork and have the child who was, and the baby girl was adopted, and she's now 43. Joe, the other person we're talking to now, and I made the allusion from 14 to 34. Mary, good afternoon. Your mother was 34 when...
Yes, Joe.
Yeah, okay. And it was Sian Ross.
Yes.
And what did you think of the report and the Taoiseach's apology?
The report was very sanitised, I thought, for the nothing short of just barbaric treatment that those poor women got. The apology, I just hope he will follow through. I feel a sham coming on because I had just a great life and really, really wonderful parents. But two things that I remember from growing up. One was a friend of my mother's was from Rathcrea, and she had said, you know, are you sure Mary was born there? And she said, oh, yeah. She said, I have, that's what it says. And she said, why? And she said, well, I know very, very few, if any of those babies stayed in Ireland, they all went to America. And secondly, my birth mother was only there from, I was born in December, she was only there 6 weeks.
Okay.
And
was she one of the women whose family paid for her to be in the mother?
Either they paid or she paid herself.
Okay.
To come to leave and bring me with her. Because Tusla have been, I've been very lucky with Tusla, or the social workers I was dealing with, but she told me that both mother and baby left on the same day on the 7th of January. Mother home, baby to Stamullen, the Good Shepherd Convent in Stamullen.
Mm-hmm.
How I got there, I'm not sure. I've since met cousins, my birth mother's nieces and nephews, and they reckoned that she, like, they would be the same age as me, younger, but that she would have brought me with her, and that she probably brought me to the home herself. But the one thing that really rattles my cage is that we have not got, like, I was born in 1961. I didn't get my birth certificate until my birth mother was dead, and I could prove that she was dead.
Okay.
I had an adopted brother, and he was living in England, and he could get his birth certificate there.
Yeah.
And did in the late 70s. And that lady, Mary Fitzgerald, I mean, I was in my intercert that year, the year she got raped. That is horrific. Why, I can't understand why in 1977 the priest and whoever was bringing up, insisted she leave, why they were in charge with kidnap. You know,
yeah.
It's another thing that has never been answered. We need our medical records. You know, the nuns were very narrow-minded. They never had any, they didn't think into the future. You know, did they think we were going to live like battery hens in cages and not go out into the world, not meet and get married, meet other halves? But because we had no idea of who we were, we could have been marrying brothers. We could have been marrying our first cousins.
Yeah, yeah.
And, oh, I don't know. It's absolutely shocking. I do hope that the Taoiseach will take Joan Burton's advice and open up all the records.
Yeah, but it was, I mentioned earlier about like the world that was there. The political leaders were saying, "I'm," including, by the way, Brendan Corish, who was Deputy Prime Minister in 1977, leader of the Labour Party. He was tarnished. Yeah. He's also quoted in something I read recently saying, "I'm a Catholic first and an Irishman second," which is what the leader of Fine Gael had said about a decade or 15 years previously. So it was.
But there's no mention of any of them being a Christian. And it's you know, it's very easy to be Catholic. You just follow the rules and don't put your foot outside. But it's very, very hard to be a Christian.
Yeah.
There's only two rules there.
Okay.
You love God and you love your neighbour. And you do your best to look out for your neighbour. That was in very short supply. People are saying about the church. I don't know. I am a practicing Catholic. Mm-hmm. But I can't see. And as for the nuns, and somebody had said that there was no they couldn't find any trace of donations or anything. These women were crafty women. They weren't going to have anything. You know, oh, there's the books. Yeah, that's the book where we got donations. Are you kidding me? All that money was probably taken out of the country.
Well, you see, can I go back to the report, what it says about donations and the allegations which have come up on... And a number of occasions, significant number of occasions, that the nuns were paid. They say a number of witnesses to the commission spoke about donations they believe were sent by their adopted parents following their adoption in the USA. Such donations were not illegal and could not be described as unethical unless the adoptive parents were trying to adopt another child. Many allegations have been made that large sums of money were given to the institutions and agencies in Ireland that arrange foreign adoptions. Such allegations are impossible to prove and impossible to disprove.
On the film, Philomena. And that was based on fact.
On the book, yeah.
On the book. Her son, Anthony's parents, they had paid. It wasn't put down as being paid, but they had paid for him. And they also charged him a horrendous amount of money to be buried in Ireland, to be buried at Shamrock.
He was buried in Shamrock, yeah.
Yes. I mean, what sort of twisted, perverse minds had they that didn't even tell the poor woman that, yes, your son is here, he has died, this is where he's buried, and save her traipsing around the world?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I just hope and pray that Micheál Martin will follow through with what he has promised to do today. And that it won't be another 10 years down the road.
And you went back to Bessborough as well, isn't that correct?
Yes.
Looking for your birth mother. And that scene in the movie, it's incredibly well portrayed, incredibly well acted.
Yes, by Judi Dench and Steve. But that was exactly in 1996, the way my husband and I were.
And that's the way you were treated, that you weren't allowed information.
A nun brought out a file and she said, oh, you know, you'll never find your mother. And I grabbed my hand to take the file.
Yeah.
And she pulled it back to her and she said, no, dear, that's not for you. And my husband said, that's her information.
Yeah.
There was, I think, three or four nuns but he just got these foreheads turned to him and gave him a look. I was afraid to look. I thought he was melted onto the chair. They didn't speak to him after that. It was kind of, how dare you open your mouth? But they didn't give me proper information. They gave me bits. They told me that my birth mother was, she'd never married, which she hadn't, and she was living with a married sister, which she wasn't. Her sister and herself had a business together.
Okay.
They were just, the way they went on, we left there thinking, she must have been a nun. But now I know why. I said, because she had paid, and they wanted to keep that, you know, they didn't want to let on that there was any donation or any payment made.
Okay. And as you say, it wasn't until you were able to produce your mother's death cert.
Yes.
So, and
she died 10 years, or she died on the 10th of January, 2017.
Did you have contact with her in the?
I didn't. I never met her. But I did, by a twist of fate, I happened to have been working with my cousin's, my first cousin's wife, and it was through her then that I had made contact again and got to meet my cousins. But I rang her, and she just said, we can get your death cert, no problem. And that was the first time I met anybody belonging to me.
Okay, Mary.
And it was, oh, such a joy.
Yeah.
And we're all still in touch.
Right.
It's compared to what other women have gone through, like my mother didn't stay there long enough to go through any of that.
Yeah.
And judging by the way they talk about her, I don't think she would have put up with it. But it was horrendous. And I had all, like growing up, it was never kept from us. We always knew we were adopted. And anybody I'd met, they were all either had been born on the St. Patrick's on the Navan Road or in Westmead. And I had never met anybody that was born in Shawnross Abbey until one morning Gay Byrne had some woman on who had a baby in Shawnross Abbey, and that was in 1996.
Okay, that was the first, and indeed the Gay Byrne radio show was mentioned in the commission report. Cathy, thanks indeed. Mary, thanks indeed, and stay well. I'm going to Cathy next and then Joanne after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we now move to 1990 in Ireland. Patrick Hillary was president until the end of that year, the 2nd of December. And Mary Robinson took over on the 3rd of December. The Taoiseach was Charles Haughey. Brian Lennon was the Taoiseach. And John Wilson was the Taoiseach subsequently. Joanne, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
And it was in the 1990s when your story. You say, I never forget the brass plaque.
Never forget it.
And what did it say?
A home for unmarried mothers.
Oh, God.
And that was in the 90s. This isn't, you know, my heart is breaking for the brave women and the men, the children who are coming on and talking to you. And like your previous caller, I feel like a little bit of a fraud because
I
didn't go through, the hell that they did. They were decent. They were decent. You know, they were as kind as any stranger can be when you're in that position, when you just want to be at home.
This is in this mother and baby home.
Yeah.
Well, the plaque even, the unmarried mothers and orphan friends. Mm. And you became pregnant after being raped.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
who made the decision to go into this home?
It was kind of a family decision, let's just say, but I wasn't included in it. It was just something that was done, and it was like it was presented as a done deal. That was the way it was. The next thing I remember, I was just going. You know, that part of it is a little bit of a blur. I don't even remember arriving. I couldn't tell you
And do you want to tell me what age you were, Joanne?
I was 19.
19, okay. And the baby, your baby?
The baby obviously was born, and I put the baby up for adoption because that was, again, presented to me as the best outcome. What could I do? Like, I couldn't, you know, I couldn't give it what it wanted or needed. And, you know, when you're told that often enough, you believe it. So I believed it.
And
I wasn't forced. I mean, I have to say, you know, nobody came to me with a bit of paper and said, sign this. And it was all done correctly. It was all done correctly. I just want to stress that because they were terrible places in the past.
Yeah,
but
no, well said. That's important.
At this stage, they did it right. You know, they did do it right.
But Joanne, did anyone sit with you and encourage you to keep your baby?
No. No, I gave birth alone. There was no one there except the hospital staff. They were there, but that was it. Yeah. There was no one there.
And was I know I'm running out of time, but was the perpetrator of the rape ever prosecuted or caught?
Yes, okay. They were. Okay. So that was one thing.
Okay.
That was one thing, so yes, they were.
Your baby now would be, what, 30s, early 30s or whatever?
Yeah, we have met. You know, because, see, my story is different. You see, this is why I don't know where to put myself.
Yeah.
I spent yesterday so confused because I was there, but I wasn't there. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't feel like I belong in the company of these wonderful, brave people who went through hell on earth and literally had their children ripped away from them. I don't feel like I belong with them, but yet I feel like it shouldn't have been still there so late in our history. You know, when we knew so much and you know, and I was never told anything. I know it sounds really ridiculous because it's so recent, but I was very naive to the whole thing. And I didn't know anything about supports, but that was never said to me. Yeah. Not once did anyone say, do you know that you can get stuff?
Yeah.
That you could actually go and live on your own and get something and get help. I was never told that. I was just told, well, we'll put you here. And to me, it was like, oh my God, they're going to put me in another place like this and I cannot do. If somebody had told me the day that I gave birth that I had to do another hour in there, I think I would have run away. Okay. And it wasn't, they weren't nasty people. I have to stress that. They weren't.
Okay, take your point.
It was just the whole thing of it was horrible.
Okay. Joanne, stay well and every kindness to you and your family. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Thanks to all the survivors who spoke today. Apologies to those we didn't get on. We will do so tomorrow and continue. Rebecca Meehan produced. Ray Darcy is next.